All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's a PGA podcast for Tuesday, June 30th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is Chris Durrell.
How's it going, man? Back for another week. Week four of the podcast. Yeah.
I know. I love it. We're actually getting new podcast art coming down the pike here, because this podcast right now is existing on either our NBA, NFL, or MLB feeds, wherever you have been listening to it, but in the process of creating our own PGA feed, which will be its own separate podcast feed. So thanks for all you that have been kind of jumping along with the other sports as we put PGA out here in this void of sports. But Chris and I are going to keep this going after things return, so that the podcast is going to
Damn
get
right.
its own. Yeah, it's just going to get its own feed, which I think is right. So that we just need to button up a couple little things to be able to do that. So keep an eye out for the PGA podcast to come out. We have a ton to talk about this week. Rocket Mortgage Classic. I did want to talk a little bit about the Travelers, because we still live in an age of quarantines and scratches and people testing positive, and PGA is not immune, no pun intended, to that to that eventuality. We had a very weird week last week with a bunch of guys just kind of pulling. Brooks Koepka pulls because his caddy tests positive. There was a few other ones. Who are some of the other ones? I should have just had
Chase.
I mean, he was
his brother Chase, yeah. His caddy, Webb Simpson. He didn't have it, but he was more of a, what was the word they used last week, or the phrase, an abundance of caution. Withdrew with an abundance of caution. So yeah, there was. Yeah, I think
he had been
about
in
the, five
he had been
six.
Like in contact. Yeah, he had been in contact with someone that had tested positive.
Yes.
There were some other ones too. It's just something. And then a couple. Bud Cauley withdrew after the first day, I believe.
Yes.
And so there, and maybe even JT Poston. I can't remember. It was just a bunch of random. And I think that's just the reality we need to live with right now. Harris English has already withdrawn from this week's. I doubt he's the last. With just 72 hours still, or 48 hours to go till they tee off, and we've seen that you can just get pulled mid-round. I think it's something to just take into account when it comes to just maybe a sport that's already insanely volatile. adds a little bit more volatility to it. I do want to recap a couple things from last week. I know you wanted to mention some stuff too. I want to start by saying our PGA projections, which are up on the site and behind our membership platform right now, the current members just have access to it, even though we've paused some of the subscriptions, but new members can come along, dfsr.com/memberships. We did have our boy Mark McClellan sent us an email. He mass GPP a bunch of stuff on FanDuel and cash for like thousands of dollars. You can see the screenshot. Because the screenshot, I put it up on our Twitter account over at Daily Fantasy SR over on Twitter. So that's our boy Mark. He's super active in chat. Great dude. Really glad to see him take down, or not take down because he came in second, but it was kind of like a bunch of lineups near the top of one of the big.
They're probably all added up GPPs. To a real nice payday.
Well, it was. I did it too, just from lower stakes one to kind of keep track of stuff as we were going, and it was just the system continues to call stuff out. Now that was FanDuel. DraftKings, a little different story. Was able to sneak 2 through 6 through the cut on DraftKings. What a disaster! It was really bad. There were a couple chalk guys that didn't. Colin Morikawa was chalk. He did not make the cut. So it wasn't like it wasn't crazy to have some big names miss the cut last week at all, but it was definitely DraftKings and FanDuel ended up being different enough lineups that it kind of like they hedged against each other. How did you turn out last week? You were doing a little bit more showdown stuff. You kind of had a little more oppression idea about there was just going to be too much craziness around guys withdrawing, and you didn't really want to live with that kind of uncertainty. How did the week turn out for you, all things considered?
Well, all things considered, it turned out, it ended good, but it started out terrible. Yeah, like we talked on the pod last week, I kind of went away from playing full tournament. The only one I did play for full tournament was Wiley's Golflandia Listener League for his podcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it turned out pretty terrible. I got 2 of 6 through, so I'm kind of happy I didn't play full tournament because I had DeChambeau, Justin Rose, Morikawa, Fratelli, Patrick Rogers, and Tyler Duncan. Duncan and DeChambeau were the only ones that made it through the cut. The rest finished like outside the top 100, so it was a complete disaster there. Showdown round 1 and 2, also a disaster. Things didn't really go well. So I took round 3 off, just kind of a little bit of a mental break. Jumped right back on round 4 using the optimizer as well as some of my own plug-and-plays with the optimizer, and actually cashed really good. Didn't get all my money back for the week, so I didn't end up break even. I did end up losing some, but round 4 definitely softened the blow a little bit.
The pricing on DraftKings for round 4 continues to be incorrect, so I just want to keep everyone as a heads up there. Brendan Todd and the ownership as well. Brendan Todd went into the on Sunday up 2 strokes with something like, I don't know, 47% chance to win. If you want to follow Data Golf, their percentage chance to win, he was like 62% owned in cash. Now, I get he had a complete and utter meltdown.
Oh my god,
it was I couldn't even watch it. We were kind of like, you know, we weren't in the same room, but we were essentially watching together because we were just kind of talking online the entire time. And I don't know what hole it was, like 12, 11, where he just chunked one out of the thing. I mean, he did something that, like, I would do as a weekend. Yeah, weekend warrior golfing stuff, like, where he just kind of just, like, floats the entire green and just ends up in the rough on the other side. And that's something you do six beers deep and, you know, you're just kind of having fun with your friends. Anyway, he does that. I still want to say that result, kind of to the side. I know you have to count results, but it was still incorrect for his percentage ownership to be that low considering how many implied win points he had just going into Sunday. Yeah. So I still continue to scream from the mountaintops that if you are playing on DraftKings, there is I believe to be a significant edge going into Sunday for their showdown just simply because of the scoring. Now, Dustin Johnson was 100% owned. Some of those Streelman was really high. So it's rounding itself out, but there continues to be an edge over there. All things considered, like I said, some of the bets were off. It was a weird week, but I think I still feel very confident in a lot of the process that we're bringing here on the podcast, the projections and all that other stuff. I want to get into Rocket Mortgage this week, obviously. I do want to ask you something about missed cuts. So we're looking at, this is such a weird time, right? Because the season essentially takes a break, okay? And the players come back. And we look at recent form, and I just don't know what to make. I want to get your opinion here, because if I look at recent form and I look at specifically missed cuts, and by the way, if you look at some things that are correlated with just success on a week-to-week basis, missed cuts do have a pretty high correlation with that's not, we don't count that in the projections, but they're essentially counted because it just kind of looks at your long-term form.
Yeah.
But missed cuts are really important, and I'm of the mind that not all missed cuts are the same, obviously.
Yes.
When you look at the last 3 weeks and you see missed cuts, are you looking at them the same as in the past? And I'm asking it because we know that the fields over the last 3 weeks have been
major.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Okay, that's a good way to put it. Major. Like, they've been essentially majors. They've been absolutely stacked and loaded fields. And so when you look at missed cuts, like you look at a Morikawa missed cut last week, you look at a Justin Rose missed cut. I know those guys aren't playing this week, but even some of these guys that we have had, you know, MCs over the last 3 weeks, are you counting them the same, or are you kind of willing to not give a guy a pass because of recent form, but to say, this is not the Travelers from the past. This is not the Charles Schwab from the past, right? Like, this is just, these are every single guy's playing. Like, how do you try to evaluate recent form relative to the field, knowing that these fields are more loaded than they've been in the past?
Well, I don't put as much into the missed cut as some. Like, I know some people, if their golfer misses a cut, they're like, okay, I'm never using this guy again, or at least going to take a 1 or 2 week break because he screwed me or whatever. I'm not of that mindset, especially now, and I wasn't before, but especially now with the long break, something that no one has experienced before. This is all brand new coming back. Some of them practice. We don't know that information, who practiced, who didn't. Some of them we do, some of them we don't. So there's a lot of unknowns out there, a lot of question marks. Even before this, I didn't really look at missed cuts the same as you. You said it perfect. Not all missed cuts are the same. This is why I think it was like 2 years ago on my sheet, I went away from just labeling a missed cut as like a number 99 as a value, just to calculate like an average finish or whatever over long term. I changed that to actually go and calculate, was that missed cut like, now it's top 65 and tie. So was that missed cut like a T70, or was that like a T135th? Did he miss the cut by 7 strokes? Did he miss the cut by 1 stroke? That's where I really implemented that into my sheets to get a better look at a player's performance, because there's a huge difference between missing the cut by 1 stroke or 10. To them, there's no difference whatsoever. But to me, when I'm looking ahead at, you know, statistics and stuff, if I got a guy that has made 7 straight cuts, missed 1 by 1 stroke, made 3 more in a row, then missed 1 by 1 stroke, I'm not worried about those 2 that he missed by 1 stroke. It could be you have to dig in a lot more. Was there weather? Was there an injury? Was, you know, there's just so much out there versus a guy that's like consistently T135, T143, finishing at the back of the field. I'm way more concerned about those guys.
100%. And like I said, from our projection standpoint, I'm not concerned with a miscut as a binary. That's not what we're doing here. We figured out early on that's simply not what we wanted to do. Though I will say, when you're lineup building around cash, where I'm going to do a little bit more of digging, you know, mass entering stuff, I'm not worried so much about individual stuff. I'm kind of just going for sheer numbers at that point. So I'm just not, I'm not going to go through the round by round breakdown of every golfer when it comes to mass entering GBPs. That's just not a good process. Now, but when you're looking at cash, I kind of do want to pay a little bit more attention to it, just to say, mostly just for a check-in, right? And I just have noticed that we're just staring at a world where lots of good players are missing cuts, and it's hard to count the recent versus the past, because recent in terms of game log still means many months out, right? So it's like, it's still, yes, it's recent in terms of just overall tournaments, but it's not recent in terms of overall timeline. So I think we're still trying to wrap our head around this, and just trying to like know what counts and what doesn't, you know, what should count for more than others. I do really want to say that long-term sample size is the thing that wins. And we're going to talk about that in terms of how our system and, you know, sort of like some of your plays, which I think are both correct for just kind of different reasons, are sort of differing from each other when it comes to the Rocket Mortgage.
Before we move on
this week. Yeah.
Before we move on into the Rocket Mortgage, I just want to look, talking about these missed cuts, just a little bit of data I put together. I put some more stuff into the sheet this week because I wanted to extract some more data, more with since the return. So I'm looking at Charles Schwab, RBC, Travelers, all the players in this field this week. There are only 7 players who have made all 3 cuts. Of the players that have played all 3 events in this field, there's 7 that have made all 3 cuts. And then going down to players that have only played 2 events out of the first 3, we've got another 8 players that have made 2 of 2 cuts that have played 2 events, obviously. So that's a very small amount of the whole field that have played these events, because they're just looking at the sample size of players that have played 3 events, we're looking at 44 players. So only 7 of those players have made all 3 cuts.
Yeah, and the reason we talk about cuts, though, in terms of, even though we're not using them to be necessarily predictive in terms of the number, we are using them to say the missed cuts end up being the most important thing to some degree, because you just need your guy playing Saturday and Sunday.
Exactly.
So if you don't have your guy playing Saturday and Sunday, and if that number, like I said, is 2 through 6 on DraftKings, you might as well just swipe right on the old app and go enjoy the rest of your weekend, because it's just not going to happen.
Exactly.
So you can survive it. You know, we survived it a little bit on FanDuel with some of these guys last week, but that was mostly just because a couple chalk guys ended that I'm not making it. Okay, let's talk Rocket Mortgage. Talk to me a little bit about the course. I want to spend a decent amount of time on the bunch of plays here, because we're looking at a slightly different field. Break down the course a little bit in terms of maybe things that might be different this week than what we've been looking for over the last 3, which have been sort of similar. I think the last 3 all Pete Dye courses.
No,
Last 2 were Pete Dye courses. Right. So we were kind of able to look a little bit sort of from course similarity, I guess you'll say, week to week. I do not believe that's the case this week. Talk to me about what we're looking for going into Thursday.
Yeah, so the Rocket Mortgage Classic here, this is only the 2nd year they've had this event. Last year was obviously the first. So it's at Detroit Golf Club in Detroit, Michigan. It's a par 72, 7,340 yards. So first par 72 since coming back from the break. The others were 2 par 70s and a par 71. A little bit shorter on the other courses. So this one's at a little bit of length here. Not that that has really proved to be much of a problem for the players. The field wasn't great last year. Although the field is a little less than we've seen the last 3 weeks, this field is still stronger than we've seen at this event last year. Nate Lashley, and some of you might be like, who? Won the event last year, minus 25. Absolutely insane. The fairways are a little bit wider, so it's very similar to last week, but this is a Donald Ross design, classic designer. He's got like over 400. I think he's been the architect of like over 400 courses worldwide. His 2 main ones that get used on the tour regularly, well, besides this one now, is Sedgefield Country Club, which is the Wyndham Championship in the playoffs, and then we've got the Tour Championship at East Lake Golf Club. So what he's really known for is using what is given to him rather than moving dirt around, you know, and using a bunch of big machines to make the golf course the way he sees it. He goes and gets a piece of land, uses what is there, and kind of constructs the golf course around that. So what that essentially does for a golfer's standpoint is no 2 holes are really the same. They're not really set up. Something else that he really likes to do is use like long angled hazards. Like your bunkers aren't just one round bunker. They kind of go down and into the fairway. So it really puts thoughts into the player's head. Like, do I challenge the end of that that bunker, or do I stay low? It really puts a lot of thought into using different shot shapes for the player. So it's not just favoring one player. I think any player can really win here. Although we've seen like Nate Lashley, like the top of the leaderboard last year was Lashley, Doc Redman, going to be super chalk this week. We'll get into that. Rory Sabatini, Wes Roach, Brant Snedeker, Joaquin Neiman, talked about him quite a bit here lately. Ted Potter Jr., Brian Stewart, Patrick Reed finished high, and then Cameron Tringali. That rounded out the top five. Those were all the players that finished minus 17 or better. So there's very little water. The big difference from last year to this year, because the scores were so low, what they tried to do was bring the rough level up a little bit. It's at 4 inches now, which is pretty darn high. Like, we're talking major level when we're talking rough length. Last year it was about 3.5. What I don't think it's going to change things a whole bunch, just because the field averaged over 64% driving accuracy last year. The top 10 averaged over 70% driving accuracy. I don't think that's going to be a big deal. What that really puts emphasis on for me, and this was huge correlation last year, like over 0.55 in terms of correlation start to finishing position, is strokes gained approach. The approach was just absolutely huge last year. You're looking at the top of the leaderboard, they were averaging almost 80% greens in regulation for all the players inside the top 10. And like the field average was over 70%, 78.5% for the top 10 players. So approach is where you're going to really gain, and not only approach, like obviously greens in regulation, how many greens you hit and give yourself a birdie chance. I'm looking at proximity. You need to be close to that hole. You need to make a ton of birdies here. So really I'm looking at par four scoring. I'm looking at strokes gained approach, and more so on the proximity over greens and regulation side of it. And then putting. With so many guys hitting the greens, it's going to be who has a hot putter on the weekend that's going to be at the top of the leaderboard. So that's kind of some things that I'm looking at this week.
Yeah, I think we're going to – and look, we're going to see – there could be a have and have-nots thing. Like you said, you know, the names that you kind of rolled down for the Rocket Mortgage last year is a different group than what we're seeing this year, because we just have some studs. Not all of them. This is not nearly – I didn't mention this at the top, but this field is not nearly as loaded as it's been for the first three.
No.
Plenty of big names did not make the trip here. Koepka obviously is not here. Dustin Johnson is not playing. There's a bunch of other guys that have chosen. Justin Rose is in here. Justin Thomas. Okay, the list goes on and on. There's a lot of guys that have played previous weeks that for whatever reason just aren't making the trip here. That being said, there are some just guys that are studs that are going to be, you know, heavy on people's minds here, just because they are names that ring out more than what this course saw last year. And I think so that's where it's one of those things where course history, 1 year of course history, does it matter?
That,
it helps.
Yeah.
Right. It helps some. Okay. Can we look at, do we get a little more of a sample size when we start looking at those other courses that you said, like the Tour Championship? Sure. Then we're going to add some better names when we look at Tour
now,
Championship.
Now, with that,
stuff.
Before you move on, the Tour Championship is only 30 players. So that's kind of takes away some of the sample size as well, because it's a very small field.
Well, right, because when you looked at that, and that was kind of where I was going to, I mean, I think I was going to go there next. Well, not really, because I was going to say that it's going to get some of the bigger names, but not as many. Like, Finau has played here the last couple of years. Fowler has, obviously. Bryson, Jason Day, although he didn't play last year. So you're getting some of the bigger names, but right, like, you're not getting, it's like, it's pretty rare. Let's put it a different way. For the field this week, it's rare to have had the guys play the last 2 years on the Tour Championship, right? Like Hideki Matsuyama played the last 2 years, okay? Patrick Reed. But that list is going to be short. Webb Simpson.
Yes.
But these are all the best golfers, though, right? So it's like, so you're getting, if you performed well, great, but also if you performed
poorly, it's not the same.
It's not the same, because if you were an average golfer in that field, that's way better than being the average golfer in the Rocket Mortgage, if that math makes sense what I'm saying, right? Like, if you're average relative to round, for the tour, then yeah, that's just so much better than whatever like Cameron Tringali did last year at the Rocket Mortgage,
right? Yeah.
against Nate Lashley and Doc Redman and guys like that. So I'm stumbling a little bit and trying to explain my thinking about why these are not apples to apples comparisons when it comes to course history, because you have to factor in who is also playing at the courses.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Okay, let's talk about who the plays are this week. And I'm going to start with the two guys that are just the most expensive, that have the best win odds, and at what point we want to make the decision to just to prioritize the two guys that I think we can clearly say are the two best overall golfers in this event, and that's Bryson DeChambeau and Webb Simpson. Right now, DeChambeau has pretty ridiculous consensus 6-1 odds to win, it's so funny because it's just such a crazy high number. And then Sims is not too far behind him, but consensus 10-1 to win. These guys are not lapping the field. I mean, DeChambeau basically is lapping the field in terms of overall projection, and rightfully so, especially how he's been playing. But at what point do we want to sacrifice mid-range guys to get, and you don't have to put them in the same categories, you might not see them the same, to play these two guys this week? Because fading both feels like kind of suicide, but I also know that their salary counts, obviously, because it gets increasingly difficult to get competent, I'll say, golfers into your lineup if you were to even play both, and maybe even just one. But give me your thoughts on the top two guys when it comes to DeChambeau and Simpson. And if you disagree that these are the top two guys, then feel free. But in terms of just overall win, I guess Tyrell Hatton is not too far behind him, but at 13-1 consensus. But what are your thoughts here on Bryson and Webb?
I got Bryson and Webb as my 1-2. They're not 1-2 on my sheet just because of some of the models and stuff. But if I rearrange my models a little bit and look more current form versus the long term, they're definitely 1-2 for me. Bryson's slightly ahead of Webb. I do like what Bryson has been doing a little bit better for me. Why I have him a little bit more is because of the par 4 scoring. He has been so consistent on par 4s, and that's where I think the par 5s this week in terms of overall hole by hole average scoring difficulty per hole, the par 5s are 1, 2, 3, and 4 easiest holes on the course. So that kind of draws that back a little bit. I'm not using par 5s so much in my stats because everyone's going to be scoring on the par 5s. Par 4s are where I think you can really separate yourself from the field, and that's where Bryson has really done that. He has gained strokes on par 4s, I believe, in 6 straight and 9 out of 12 rounds since the return, where Webb is kind of in that, I think, 5 of 12. He's only played this 8 rounds. So I think he's like 4 or 5 out of those rounds that he's played gaining strokes on the par 4. So that's where Bryson really gives a little bit of an edge over Webb for me. But both of them, I agree with you, are elite plays. I don't think you can get both in one lineup. That's going to be pretty impossible. For cash games, I don't think I'm going to either myself. I know the system is going that way. So I'm interested to see, kind of hear some of the lower end plays that the system is liking there. I'm going a little bit more of a balanced approach.
I don't know if you're going to want to hear these names, so we'll wait. We'll save that for a little bit near the end. I will say one thing, and I grouped them together, and it's a little bit unfair, but mostly to DeChambeau here, because the difference in his projection from 1-2, so he's first and then Webb Simpson is second, the difference between his projection and Webb Simpson's is the same difference as Webb Simpson, and yet all the way down to sixth, okay? So it's pretty clearly DeChambeau, and then there's a not insignificant drop off to Webb Simpson, and then it's closer when you get around below. So I think I get why sort of mathematically when it comes to optimization, it's prioritizing those two. But I will say it's not prioritizing Webb Simpson at that dollar amount nearly as much as DeChambeau. Like, if there was a guy from those two to get away from me, it's easily get away from Webb Simpson and just play DeChambeau. Like, our system does think it's kind of, like I said, like suicide to not play him specifically. I should, so maybe being a little unfair to him to group them both together, but mostly they were sitting out, they were standing out above the rest. And I do think, you know, from ranking and whatnot, that they're are the two best golfers. But DeChambeau is just, I would say, he's entering a class of his own, especially when it comes to this field. So if we're not going to play both of them, and I think I'm with you on that. I get a little less comfortable seeing the other names at the bottom end of the spectrum when it comes to playing both of them. It gets a little bit easier to stomach, if you will, when we get away from Webb Simpson.
Yeah.
Where are you looking in the next group? And I'm going to put that next group on DraftKings. That's going to be like the sub 11,000 to probably, it's like sub 11,000 to mid 9,000s range. And that's, I'll tell you the list if the listeners aren't looking at this group. It's Tyrell Hatton, Patrick Reed, Hideki, Victor Hovland, Sungjae Im, and Ricky Fowler. And I'll throw it down to Tony Finau too, because, you know, like, we always got to talk about our boy.
We love Tony Finau over at DFSR.
Major chalk last week, by the way. He was among the highest owned, maybe was the highest owned play on DraftKings. I should go back and look, but he was incredible chalk. So want to take this to say, you know, not pat ourselves on the back, but so it wasn't like we were taking some crazy outlier guy
when we took
Tony Finau here. But where are you looking when it comes to this next group after those two top guys that I mentioned?
Yeah, I don't have my article out yet. It'll be out shortly after the podcast here. But Bryson was number one in the article. Number two for me, you'll find, is Victor Hovland. He has just been so consistent. He missed three or four cuts before the break, finished 42nd at the Arnold Palmer. But since the return, top 25s in all three, and he's gone T23, T21, T11, so he's trending towards that top 10. His ball striking has been absolutely elite. The only thing that's really let him down is the putting. Putting is one of the most variance out of any part of a golfer's game. So as long as he's got elite ball striking, I'm going to continue to ride him, because if he puts even a average putting round together, he's looking at a top 10, and in this field, probably going to be close to maybe getting that second career win. So that's the way I'm looking at him. Seems like it's a little expensive what we paid for him in the past. Again, that's relative to the field. 2,200 more than last week. Might scare a few people away, but I'm not 100% on that, just because he's right now behind Doc Redman, and Bryson DeChambeau is third in tag counts over on Fanshare Sports, one of our partners that we have there. Excellent source that I use in terms of looking at ownership projection and where the chips are going to fall. So he's definitely going to be there for me. He finished T13 here last year. Like I said, he's got form, stats. The only thing that's missing for me is the putting, and that can come on. If he can get a hot putter, I think he can push for a win. Other than that,
Real quick, before you move on from Van Hovland, I want to make one point about what you're saying about variance around the specific stat. And I think, let me just clarify it for those that maybe don't know it, and maybe if I'm wrong, then you need to clarify it for me. But when you're saying, when you say the putters may be like the easiest thing to correct, so what you're saying is the only thing that's sort of been holding back even higher finishes is the putting. That's an almost even more encouraging sign. That's what you're saying, correct?
Yes, right? Because that is 100% correct.
Because that's, I mean, if we get down to the absolute game of inches or millimeters, then the putting piece is the piece where an inch or a millimeter left or right is the difference of being, you know, going absolutely bonkers. And if that's the thing that's holding you back, then actually that's a very good sign going forward for the rest of your overall finishing games. Did I sum that up correctly? Is that like the correct way to think about that?
Yeah, because ball striking, if your ball striking is off, and we've seen this in the past where guys are like elite putters, top five in the game, they make cuts simply on their putter just because they're never going to have the upside because they're not hitting enough greens, they're not making enough birdies, they're saving pars with their awesome putter or saving the big scores, but their ball striking's not there. They're never going to have that upside versus a guy that's ball striking really good. He's making cuts. He's going to get a win as soon as he starts dropping, you know, let's say 5 to 6 more putts in a tournament that, you know, two of them don't lip out, one of them doesn't come up, you know, a foot short. Those start going in. And boom, all of a sudden he's in, you know, the conversation on Sunday as in the hunt to win the tournament.
Right. Okay. And if you look at Hovland right now, he's, let's say, fifth best consensus odds, tied with Matsuyama to win right now at around 18-1. Like you said, the price has climbed a little bit. It's up over 10,000 on DraftKings now, it's right at 10,000 on DraftKings now, which is fifth highest overall, most expensive play of the week, but also warranted really, really high projection. I want to get your thoughts here on Matsuyama, actually, because we briefly talked about him before the podcast started, and then we said we were just going to hold it for the podcast because we thought we were going to maybe end up disagreeing about something. Not disagreeing, that's the wrong word. But bring him up in terms of where you landed him, because right now we have him at third overall highest projection on DraftKings. Right above Finau, a little bit above Tyrell Hatton. That's where he's living, and then it's like Hovland and him. Where do you stand on him? Because overall, long term, you have to like what he's, you know, the kind of golfer he's been. It's not been as good since the restart, but that's just, it's in the form of one missed cut at the RBC. Excuse me, he only played the RBC, and he missed the cut. How much, but before that, WGC Mexico, 6th, Genesis, 5th, Waste Management, 16th, Sony, 12th, WGC HSBC, 11th, Zozo, 2nd. I know that's not as big of a one, but I mean, these are CJ Cup at Nine Bridges, 3rd. I mean, this guy had an incredible run before the break, but he misses the cut at RBC. I don't know. I kind of think that the projection is correct here, and maybe he's getting dinged a little bit by just only having played one out of the three events. What are your thoughts here on Hideki?
You really changed my mind talking about the importance of missed cuts and what they mean. And I think a lot of people will glaze on look at that and kind of keep that in their mind, fresh in their mind when it comes to ownership this week, because we talked about Bryson and Webb. Obviously going to be very popular. Victor Hovland's going to be very popular. Right in the middle of those guys, you got Patrick Reed, Matsuyama, and Tyrrell Hatton. I think of that group, of that, let's say, 10,000 and up group, there's 6 of them. I think Matsuyama may be the lowest owned of that group, and I'm 100% on board with you. I think he's a great play. Like, he's been super consistent, and when he's not just consistent, he's putting up top fives, top tens when he's been super consistent before this. He missed a cut at the Heritage. Before the break, it was a T56 at the Arnold Palmer with 3 absolutely terrible rounds to finish that one out. So we haven't seen the form come back yet. I think that's going to lead to low ownership. We know all about his upside and how hot. If he can get a hot putter going, I think he can be there. Like, there's only, looking at par 4 and 5 scoring in this field on my sheet, there's only 4 players that rank top 15 in both par 4 and par 5 scoring. He's one of them. I absolutely love that combination, especially here. If you're going to be sinking birdies on the par 5s while also gaining strokes on the field on the par 4s, I don't see why he doesn't have a shot to be on that leaderboard come Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, and I think from an ownership perspective, we might be able to take a W here from just him having not played, right? Like, missing the cut. Like, missing the cut RBC and just sitting the next two out for whatever reason, I think that's just an off-the-radar thing, as opposed to some of these other guys, like Hovland. Like, Hovland's a good example. By the way, this is not a dig at Hovland. His projection is incredibly high, too. Like I said, 6th overall highest projection. But sixth. Right in the same range, but of course you'd feel better about playing Hovland going into this week if you just look at recent form, because it's been amazing since restart. So I'm not knocking that at all. I'm just saying that if you broaden out your sample size and just say, look, I mean, how much different is Matsuyama at this point? Is he like, is he worse than he was before because he missed one cut? No. Okay. So probably not. I don't know. I didn't sit with him over the quarantine and just watch every single thing he did. Right. So I can't claim that, you know, what's been happening for him or not. But sometimes you do have to trust sample size to at least tell you something, rather than let recent form or recent bias sway you in one direction. And it's not a case against Hovland in particular. It's more of a case of like, let this one thing change our opinion too much. Some of these other guys, you know, thoughts on Finau. I think we see higher ownership him again. He still cannot crack over 10K on DraftKings, sort of no matter what the ownership or what anything happens with this guy. He just never is more. He's just never all that expensive on DraftKings, and it always kind of seems like a value. And I guess people finally got onto it last week. But what are your thoughts on Finau? And then he's 9,300 on DraftKings. Thoughts on Finau, and then we'll kind of step it down a tier or two to talk about some value plays in the mid range.
Yeah, Fino's just, like we talked about last week, just so consistent, and the price doesn't really, like, in this field, he should be one of the 10K guys, in my opinion, just with his consistency. I mean, the price came up 1,100 on DK, 700 on FanDuel, but in my opinion, just looking at long-term consistency, I would not have Ricky Fowler more expensive than Tony Finau. I wouldn't even maybe have, Matsuyama, okay. Hovland is pretty close right there with Finau, you know, in terms of that. Tyrrell Hatton, he's just been super, he's been super consistent, red hot. He's picked up that win at the Arnold Palmer before the break. He finished T3 after the break in his one event back, so I get why he's more, but Tony Finau should not be cheaper than Ricky Fowler, in my opinion.
What am I missing with I'm going to interrupt you again. What am I missing with Ricky Fowler here? By the way, this is from a guy who said the system was like, if you don't play Ricky Fowler over the last 2 weeks, and you're just a stone cold donkey. So I get that, like, I can see why I shouldn't just call call no mercy on Ricky Fowler here this early because our system has liked him, though it's finally getting away from it because he's been garbage. But the win odds seem kind of high. Like, he's, I mean, 30-1 now, which is not high, but am I just missing something? Is he just... Is he done? Like, he's missed two cuts, but he missed a bunch of cuts before. He missed a bunch of cuts before the break too. Has not really finished all that high. Hasn't finished in the top 10 since back on January 2nd. So that's, you know, 7 or 8 different tournaments. What's up with Ricky Fowler here? Finally, the numbers for us are getting away from him, thank God, because I don't want it to keep looking into what was going on here. But is it strike you as weird that his price is still in this range and even the win odds are kind of like a step below the top class? Like, I looked at him like, wow, man, what is going on here with Ricky Fowler?
Yeah, he's just been terrible. He's not making birdies. Like, he's had 4 birdies last week. That's over 2 rounds before he missed the cut. Week before that, he only had 6 birdies, and he's almost having, how many bogeys did he have in that event? He had 6. So he's 6 birdies, 6 bogeys. He's just not making enough birdies. He's not hitting enough greens. The whole game just seems to be off. Like, looking at his stats here in this field, which I'm looking at the last 3 tournaments, how players have played, and some of them I get don't have the full sample size here. Fowler's played, he's played twice since the return. So he is 90th in birdie or better gained in this field, and this is not the elite fields we're talking about from the last couple weeks. He's 92nd in par 4 scoring, 62nd in DraftKings scoring, 79th in strokes gained putting. There is not, 46th is his best stat out of the main ones that I'm looking at, and that's strokes gained approach. So he's... it's pretty much a disaster. I would say the way he's been playing, his price should be, I would say, low 8K range, mid 8K range.
Yeah, like, make us think about it.
Exactly.
Like, put him at 8,500 and make us think about it a little bit. I just don't, the 9,500 just makes it the easy, for cash at least, makes it a pretty easy call to never even go there. So yep. I just don't know why he's more expensive than Fina. I was making sure I just wasn't missing something. All right, let's walk down, a step down into the next tier. This is probably in DraftKings. This is something like, you know, the sub 9,000 range, starting let's say mid sevens up to about 8,800 with Rory Sabatini. He's 8,800. Not to say we need to include him. I'm just giving him, he's the first guy below 9K. And that goes down to, you know, like the Harold Varners and Maverick McNeely's of the world in that mid 7K range. Who do you like in here? I just mentioned those two guys just as price comparisons. Not to say that these are the guys you need to pick, obviously. But who do you like in this mid sevens to high 8K range over on DraftKings?
Well, let's just get the elephant in the room here. Let's just get it out of the way and address it right now. Doc Redman is going to be super chalked this week. Before I even looked at FanShare Sports, I kind of felt that way. One, what people were talking about on Twitter, that was like when pricing came out, it was like, boom, Doc Redman week, 8,500. So the price has came up, but he finished second here last year. He's been trending in terms of form. The ball striking has been absolutely elite. I'm just going to bring that up here real quick for him. He's number one in strokes gained approach, number one in opportunities gained, 26th in birdie or better, 13th in DraftKings scoring, and 19th in par 5 scoring, 34th in par 4 scoring since the break. So the putter has let him down too, so it's kind of like Victor Hovland, but I don't think he's in the same class of player as Victor Hovland at all. But still, he's 99th in strokes gained putting while having elite ball striking. So you could say that even though his form has trended towards, you know, what was a T11 last week, that he could have been even better if he'd sunk a few more putts, very similar to Victor Hovland. So that's kind of the chalk play. I think he's going to be a guy that I'm going to look to in cash for sure. The one play I'd like in this range, if you're going, like in GPP, if he's any chance, he's going to be 25 to 30% owned. I'm probably going to be underweight in GPPs. And I like going to Christian Bezuidenhout, who we talked about him a few weeks ago. You asked me about him. The sample size is very small when we're talking about him, but he has just been so consistent since coming over. He's a European Tour regular, but he came over to the PGA Tour this year, and he has played, I believe, 5 events. He's made the cut in 4 of them, and when he's made the cut in those 4, they're all top 30 finishes.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the one I'm struggling with a little bit because I'm trying to set in some parameters around sample size and at what point your sample size can be trusted. He is one of those ones that is way too low in terms of what I just have for PGA stops. I only have 20 rounds for him,
right?
And that's just simply not enough. Now, if you take his 20 rounds, he's been amazing. He's been, you know, not in the same range as some of these other kind of like stud guys, but he's, I'm trying to scroll real quick to say, like, the 0.987, I should have had this prepared. Like, he's in he's like better than Ricky Fowler, right? He's better than a lot of the guys. He's better than Adam Hadwin. He's better than Brian Harman. I mean, these other guys, he's kind of trending toward Tyrell Hatton range, like in terms of just how good he's been, just in terms of those 20 rounds. And I'm like, well, it's also just 20 rounds. So this one's a little weird for me. I did wait it, like for most other guys, I will just kind of write them off until they've reached a threshold that I feel comfortable with. He's one where I'm willing to sort of fudge it a little bit because mm-hmm. he does have some chops on the European tour. And that one's a little harder to rate also, so I don't bring as much Euro stuff in. But yeah, I don't think he's going to have that high ownership, mostly because probably I think most people will feel like they're not getting the same sample size either. And so I'm not worried about a fade there. And I'm mostly just saying it because as I learned to just with these projections, it's at some point you have to make sort of just judgment calls on what enough of a sample size is. And he's one that, I kind of manually adjusted because I wouldn't allow this to really happen for most other guys. So I don't know. Yeah. It's kind of a long winding answer, but that's kind of where I am with him.
And right now, Bezuidenhout has, Redmond has over three times as many tags on Fanshare as Bezuidenhout. So I really do think he's going to be like half the ownership. So in GPP, if we see Redmond at about, let's just go ahead and say 25%, I think we're going to get Bezuidenhout somewhere around 15%, maybe even lower, possibly not. But I think right around that 15% is where we're going to get him. So I'll take that 10% discount in GPPs and go a little bit overweight on him and underweight on Redmond.
Our system Redmond might be a little... cash. Yeah, we're going to be off of Redmond a little bit here unless I decide to just make a judgment call on his projection. His historical stats aren't going to get him there at the price.
Right.
His projection's fine. It's not a bad projection. It's just that the price difference ends up becoming sort of paramount here based on the rest of the group that he's in. So I got to decide.
If he was high 7K or even like 7,600 to 7,800, he would probably be in lineups, I would assume.
It'd be a lot, but actually, I'll give you an example, actually, of a guy who's within his range of projection, but is that $1,000 cheaper. It's Maverick McNealy, okay?
Right.
So on DraftKings, Redmond's 8,500, McNealy is 7,600. We have him right around the same projection, Redmond just a tick higher. But this is an example of, what do we do here? Because so give me your thoughts on Maverick McNealy, because he's the exact example of if Doc Redmond was 7,600. Well, according to our system, he is Doc Redmond at 7,600, right? So like at what point... would you feel comfortable with that kind of play on McNealy? Systems kind of liked him over the last couple weeks. Been decent. He's 9,300 on FanDuel. Did make the cut in both weeks. T58 at RBC, T32 at Charles Schwab. Didn't get there for Arnold Palmer, but the Honda finished T11, Puerto Rico, T27, the Pro-Am, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am, whatever, that's those T5th, and then Farmers Insurance was T15. Mm-hmm. Like he has results here, not here at this course, but he's had results sort of short term and longer ish term. But do you see that? I'm using that 7,600 for the same exact projection guy on McNealy. Could you stomach a play like that this week?
For cash games, yes. And this is a case that we were talking about before, like with Doc Redmond and Victor Hovland with the elite ball striking but missing on the putting. McNealy has been the total opposite of that. He has been red hot with the putter and around the green, but has been absolutely terrible ball striking. He's 85th in strokes gained approach, 75th in birdie or better, 103rd in opportunities gained. So he's not even really, the approach game has really been taken away from his birdies, which makes sense. Those correlate. If you're not hitting greens, you're not going to have birdie putts. But the putting has helped him get through and push through the cuts and make a lot of cuts. But that bad ball striking, like we talked about before, is really holding back him in terms of upside. So I like him for cash games just because I like the floor that he provides of making the cut at that 7,600 price tag. I like the upside with Redmond a lot more because he's shown us that he's got those T11s with elite ball striking and shitty. I don't want to call it shitty putting, but below average putting over the last couple weeks, especially last week. So that's kind of how I sort those two out.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. And that's going to be something we're having a little trouble kind of calling out because it is just going to go round by round and less about how you're getting there in each round, which is as we grow with the system, we'll continue to factor those things in, which I do think is going to be important. A couple other guys that we just have here as possible value plays, though I haven't kind of just fully landed on the final projection. Adam Hadwin having here, 8,200 on DraftKings. Brant Snedeker at 7,900. He's looking like something of a points per dollar value. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on these two guys.
Who was the second guy?
It was Hadwin. The first one was Hadwin, and the second one was Snedeker.
Snedeker. Okay. So Hadwin, I'm on board with in terms of, again, with cash games. He just hasn't, you know, of guys that are in that same price range, he hasn't shown anywhere near the same upside in terms of like top 15, top 10, DraftKings scoring. He's been putting out like T25s to like T40s, T50s. So he's consistently making the cut right now. He just hasn't flashed that upside. So he's more of a cash play for me. I love the ball striking for Hadwin and his long-term consistency of making cuts. Snedeker, I haven't really looked a whole bunch into. I know he did good here last year. I think he was T5 here last year. He's got some decent... He's always a consistent guy, but I'd rather go down myself to Harold Varner. Never really thought of him as a guy that would be consistent for cash games, but the ball striking has been absolutely elite. He's fourth in strokes gained approach over the last three tournaments, eighth in DraftKings scoring, fourth in opportunities, third in birdie or better gained, and the putting is like 85th, so it's actually been pretty bad in terms of putting, while the ball striking has been really good, and he's been consistent in terms of his finishes as well. He missed the cut at the RBC, 19th at the Charles Schwab, 32nd at the Travelers, and had made three straight cuts before the break as well, so he's now put together 5 of 6 made cuts with a couple top 25s in there over his last six. So I'm really looking at him more than Snedeker, but I think possibly Snedeker might be a little bit lower owned.
Yeah, we had Varner right there with Maverick McNealy in terms of projection, right around the same.
I'm wrong about Snedeker. Snedeker's top three in tags right now, so there's a chance he's going to be high owned. So maybe I'm right, and Varner might be a little bit lower owned than Snedeker.
Interesting. Yeah, right now, no, that's okay. I mean, like right now, our DraftKings lineup is something like Bryson DeChambeau, but then it has these guys. It has like, you know, Finau, I can stomach that. It has Snedeker, 79. Maybe we could work in Doc Redman in there and take a hit somewhere else. Like, I'm not sure. It's like weird. The problem is getting DeChambeau in there just does really hamper the rest of your lineup in a way that like you're going to have to stomach somebody. So, but again, I just can't really overstate the fact that he's just so good compared to the field. And if there was a guy to probably just break the bank out and take a risk on the lower end, I do think it's Bryson in this case. I'm happy to be wrong about that, I suppose. But it just doesn't seem correct to be on a fade for him this week, just judging by how much better than the rest of the field he is. Let's any other kind of we're getting close to an hour here, which is cool. But the what other value guys you're looking at this week? Last week you were on Will Gorton, which was sick. There was a couple other kind of out of nowhere dudes that came along the way. I mean, we had Will Gorton. Did he end up finishing T3? Because I know he had finished T3 to get his card. Did he get there? We were kind of sweating that. And then when the rain delay came last week, I kind of walked away and just kind of checked back in. Secretly.
That's so huge for him. That's like a life-changing thing for him. Like to get that card and get that security, that job security, that you don't have to Monday qualify or you don't have to worry about sponsors exemptions anymore. You're in the field. You can post, you enter it, you're in the field. Like it's absolutely amazing for him. My two value guys last week, that was the highlight. I should have talked about that in the intro. My two value guys I wrote up were Will Gorton and Tyler Duncan. Absolutely crushed it. And that's, Mark said Will Gorton was in his lineup at like 0.8% owned or something like that. So that was, that's a huge win. I'm just going to pat myself on the back here one more time. It was also nice because I seen some people on Twitter like, who's Will Gorton? Did anyone even talk about him? Did anyone even roster him? This is hilarious. And I just wanted to reply like, go check out my article over at dfsr.com. I had him there. But anyways, he went up quite a bit in price where Tyler Duncan kind of stayed in that 7K. It's only $300 more, but I like Gorton more for GPPs. I'm going down a little bit into that 7K range. I like Tyler Duncan in all formats this week. He's just shown some consistency with his ball striking 100%. So I'm going with him. He missed the cut here last year. I'm not too worried about that. His iron play right now is nowhere near his iron play last year coming into this event was nowhere near where it is now. So I'm not really concerned about that 1 year sample size. Peter Uihlein's a guy I will look at in terms of GPP in that range as well. Same with Sam Burns. I like those three. And then I'm going to just go back in the Wayback Machine here and see if you remember this name from, 5 years ago, before you even knew who I was. Sean Stefani, does that ring a bell?
No, 5 years? I feel like I've known you forever. I guess it's only been 5 years. Yeah, I feel like we've been talking since.
I found DFSR on Twitter, and you guys were looking for a PGA writer. So I contacted you on DM, and you said, okay, send me a write-up. Pick a player of this week's event. I forget what the event was, but I'll always remember the player. It was Sean Stefani, and I did a little write-up on him. He actually even made the cut that week, but you had replied back within, I bet you, 20 minutes. This is the best write-up I've seen so far. You're hired.
there we go.
I had to bring this up this week because it has seriously been 5+ years. I can't believe it.
That's crazy. I only, not to go down in the Wayback Machine, but I do remember James and I talking about, and for those that don't know, if you're new to the podcast, James Davis is the other co-founder of DFSR, talking about, I was like, dude, we may have found a guy that likes PGA, NASCAR, and hockey, the three exact sports that we don't like. This is unbelievable that this guy was genetically created in a lab to come work for us because he just figured out that there's the three sports that we just don't have a single clue. I mean, this is years and years ago, a single clue about, and, this came. So I didn't know, but I did not. I would never in a million years would have remembered. would have remembered this. By the way, I didn't know you were going to bring this up because I'm trying to rifle back through my emails to see if I can find it. I did see one email that had a subject line called turd. So I'll go back and look about what that was about. I'm not sure why you would have sent me something with turd. But no, yeah. Walk me through a couple of any other chief dudes that you like. Maybe come out of nowhere, dudes.
Yeah, and the reason I had Stefani, he's 6,300. I don't think I'm going to go there in cash. I mean, he's a guy I would definitely consider in cash if you're going to Bryson or Webb Simpson. He hasn't played since the Puerto Rico Open back in February, so there has been an extended break. But before that, he had made every cut except for the first one of the year at the Greenbrier way back in September. So he was 5 out of 6 making cuts. He was kind of consistent there. He's made the cut here last year, T35. He came in with not great form into this last year, so I that's why I'm kind of discounting that. At 6,300, I'll take a shot in GPP. Or, like I said, I will approve of him in cash if you are going with, like, loading up on a Bryson kind of Stars and Scrubs cash lineup. Other than that, I'm really building for cash games that mid-range, going around, like, Hovland, Redmond, Bezuidenhout, Harold Varner, we talked about, and then the three values that I'm looking at, Uline, Duncan, and Burns. More Duncan for cash and Uline and Burns for GPP. But that's really where I'm at right now for values.
Yeah, that's like not too far off, I think, from where the projection system is. I got to be honest with you. I was like half listening for that because I actually found the email that you sent. Nice. So I was furiously scrolling. So if I don't respond to each and everything that you just said over the last, just know that I was doing something equally important, which was circling through.
Perfect.
It's a 40 email thread between you and I. It was from January 27th, 2015. So you are right. We're actually 5.5 15. Years.
Wow.
And then, you sent me a full fantasy golf article. Sean Stefani. There you go. After considering all the information in front of me this week, the guy that will be in the most lineups for me is Sean Stefani. Comes in the Phoenix, 6th in ball striking, 47th distance, and on and on and on it goes. We should frame this, buddy. This is the start of something beautiful and robust over the the years and years. That 5.5 years, I simply can't believe it. Well, it feels like nothing, and it feels like forever. So anyway, I don't have too much to respond about what you just said about them, but my internet got a little weird too during that time. So I kind of only half heard it. This is not exactly the professional sounding podcast that you want to hear on the way out, but that's all right. If you want to go check out Chris's article, he's going to have picks up for the Rocket Mortgage later on today. We'll cover a lot of what we talked about over the course of the podcast and much more because he just gets really in-depth with his stats. You can also go sign up for either go to dfsr.com/membership, and that will bring you to PGA Optimizer, which will also give you – so that's the PGA projections for DraftKings and FanDuel, but also give you access to Chris's sheet. Or if you just want Chris's sheet, you go over to Patreon/JaegerBombs. That's JaegerBombs. That's it, right? There's no number at the end. And I'll put that link over there too. So if you just want Chris's sheet, go over and check that out. That's a monthly subscription as well. Definitely, definitely, definitely worth it, as others in the industry have shown us by trying to take what he does and put it up as their own work. So the proof is in the pudding from other people just wanting to use that as and say it's theirs. That's the most sincere form of flattery sometimes.
Flattery.
Total imitation. Yeah. Well, it's flattery once it stops. Once it's going on, it's a little bit annoying. So but you can go check all that stuff out. We'll be in the chat room. That's part of the dfsr.com/membership. Membership, where we're going to be talking about some of the bets too. We went through bets last week. We'll go through lineups. We'll be talking all that stuff over there. So go check all that stuff out. Buddy, enjoy this weekend of golf. Glad you sent us that email 5.5 years ago. It's been a match made in heaven. And good luck in the Rocket Mortgage.
Thanks for putting up with me for all this time. And good luck to this week, everyone.
All right.